10, 9, 8.
So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. And while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs and then closed up the place with flesh.
7, 6, 5, 4.
I was born a male. I started living as a female when I was 19 years old, had a sex change when I was 30 years old. I've now been living as a woman for 28 years, and I fully regret this.
Nobody can change genders. It's impossible. It's delusional. It's a mental illness.
Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man.
Once I finally had the surgery, I went, oh, this was the wrong thing to do. It was the wrong thing to do to cut off my male anatomy.
The man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh."
The fact of the matter is that 40% of people who are attempting suicide are people who regret ever changing genders.
Lift off, Falcon 9.
I set my alarm for right there around 4 o'clock. To get up, but usually I wake up beforehand. It's as though God just wakes me up. I read the Bible, and then I pray, and then I try to be still and listen for His voice, His guidance. Hi, my name is Billy Burley. I'm living here in Lompoc in this house, and I used to work for NASA. Y'all come on in and let me show y'all around the house a little bit. So the weather over here in Lompoc is exceptional. We don't have air conditioning over here. And so we keep the doors and windows open for a good bit throughout the year. I was a skinny little introverted kid, had a speech impediment and tried to talk, but a lot of people didn't understand me. My body told me that I belong with the boys, but my thoughts, my mind was saying that I belonged with the girls. And I didn't know which way to go. Wanted to be like my sisters. I thought I should be like my sisters. And when my older sister started wearing makeup, I started playing with some of her makeup in the bathroom. And then in the sixth grade, when I was on the summer league swim team, and we had a new diving coach. Well, what he would do is, when he had a chance, he would play with me. He would fondle me. And try to get me to have an erection and just continue to play with me. Carmelli, I'm going to have to shut you into a room. Can we pause for just a moment?
Yeah, sure.
Come on, Carmel. Let's get you into a room back here. You are going to keep moving around. Come on.
Quiet, bad dog. Bad dog.
Hold one moment. I will try to silence the dog. Dottie! Dottie! Go lay down. Lay down. Go lay down. First off, my name is Renee Jacks, and I'm an author. I've written 8 books so far, 3 of them to do with transsexuality. I was born male, grew up in a very conservative Republican family. My father was pretty much absent most of my childhood. He was an alcoholic. My mother was mentally ill. The childhood was so troubled and so traumatic that, in retrospect, I was able to look at it and realized that there was no way I was getting out of childhood normal. You go and you take a shower and you're there to get clean, but every time I had to take off my clothes, every time I went to bathe, you know, there's no getting around the fact that I wasn't a girl, that I was a boy. And that really is the one memory that sticks out, is just how much I hate my penis, hated my penis. By the time I left high school, when I was 18, I was cross-dressing most of the time once I was away from school. And a couple years afterwards, I ended up in San Francisco, which had a very small gay community. And I started, I had made the decision by the time I was about 20 to start living full time as a girl. When you start dating people, and if you pass well enough, the whole purpose is, are you a transsexual or are you a woman? And in my mind, I was always a woman. I'm wanting to date, and I'm not telling the men that I'm dating that I have a penis. And so when they find out, they become violent. There were a couple instances where I was beaten very badly.
I'm Miro Djordjevic. I'm a surgeon and a urologist, and I'm a leader of Belgrade Center for Genital Reconstructive Urology. Our center is very well known, especially for transgender surgery, and we perform all types of transgender surgery, male to female, female to male, redo surgery with possible complications, and one of the very, very actual now, reversal surgery in regretful after another way in transgender transformation. We try always to make a genitalia to be first very functional and then to be more acceptable in aesthetical view. If we discuss about male to female, our results are much better. Why? Because in one surgery we create a completely normal female genitalias, and these persons usually can have a sexual intercourse, can enjoy in sexual activity. According to our experience, more than 90%. Transgender surgery starts to be very popular for both persons and doctors. And you can find that too many jokes on this field. Oh, I'm going to make my genitalia to be different like now, and I will be a very nice lady, or I will be a very strong man, or something like this. And after that, after some event like alcohol or drug abuse or something like this, you're awake from anesthesia with a new genitalia.
The main milestone was finding a doctor who would give me the hormones. If I get the hormones, female cross-sex hormones, my life will be perfect. And then you think, well, if I can only get my voice, get my male voice up here, then that'll make me, you know, just happy. And then you think the next thing is, well, if I can get breast implants, that's all I need. It's never enough. And finally, if you've gone through the therapy and you can convince a doctor to start cutting on you, you go and you have a sex change. I had my sex change in 1990. And in the back of my mind, I thought it might be like all the other stuff I had done. But I was hoping, just hoping, that that would make me feel complete.
I don't want to get in there. So why would you tell your neighbor that you did something that was so stupid? It's absolutely ridiculous to tell a neighbor, hey, I was a transgender and I've detransitioned. Pretty embarrassing to go through a gender change, to be that stupid, to believe that you can actually change genders. You gotta be pretty ill-equipped to handle the truth. I was born in Los Angeles to a good family, good people. I was taken to my grandmother's house quite frequently, as my parents liked to go away on the weekend. They liked to camp and fish. I somehow became interested at my grandma's house in cross-dressing, and I had mentioned something to her about that. So she decided to make me a purple dress and allow me to put it on and wear the dress. I finally got so interested and excited about wearing the dress that I got tired of waiting till I was going to go to Grandma's house to secretly cross-dress. So I snuck the dress home, but my mom found the dress. And so then Dad got upset. I was never allowed to go to Grandma's house again. The first step was I changed my name secretly when I was about 13 years old to Crystal. Probably in my late 20s, I started to talk to doctors about hormone therapy, and I began to take hormone therapy. 35 years ago, there wasn't much information, and we concluded that based on everything that was available at the time, that undergoing hormone therapy, further hormone therapy, and gender reassignment surgery would be the answer to resolve this, quote, gender identity disorder. That's when I, in April of 1983, I underwent the gender reassignment surgery by Dr. Biber in Trinidad, Colorado. It was amazing. I felt like the world had been lifted from my shoulders, and it was all really wonderful. The only thing I don't know is, was it all the medication from 5 hours of surgery that made me feel this way, or was it because I'd gone through the surgery? Because you're pretty heavily medicated. My female name at the time was Laura Jensen.
Lompoc is a nice town, and it's quiet and it's small. I was a little bit apprehensive going into surgery, but also a little excited too. Finally, we're at this point. And after going into surgery and then coming out of surgery and being in the elevator, I asked somebody, is it gone? And they assured me that it was gone. And I was very relieved. I was losing a lot of blood through the surgical site. What they did was kept putting gauze into my new vagina, but I was excited. I was excited that finally this is done. This is now behind me. So now I'm starting my new life.
I never had the full ability to have intercourse, because the vagina that they make is so small. So anytime I tried to have intercourse, it was extremely painful, and it wouldn't happen. So these surgeries are nothing more than plastic surgery. They don't create the phalluses that they create for female to males are really hideous looking. I've had several female to male friends, and you look at it and you just go, oh God, you paid for that. It's horrible. The sex change didn't solve my discomfort. The doctors who are honest will say that the gender dysphoria is always there. And it's because the confusion is, it's not so much, it starts out being about your anatomy, but really what it's, you don't like yourself. Being a freak in society, being, I call it in my book, a social pariah, is not the way you want to live. The isolation drives you to despair. And so, yeah, suicide is a big, big thing.
Maybe you can remember exact day when you thought about committing suicide, and how did you stop yourself?
Yesterday, I don't know. The first time was right before the surgery in 1990. And the only thing that kept me from doing it, quite honest, is I'm a coward at heart.
Just was so deeply disturbed at the time. I wanted to end my life, and somebody I knew had some cocaine, so I attempted to use it to kill myself, and it obviously didn't work, but my heart was pounding so hard after I took it that I thought it was going to come out of my chest. I feel safer having done that and not staying in one place very long where people might find out what I do and who I am. I don't want people to know that are around me. I don't want to be outed by the people around me. I was leaving church one day on Sunday, 3-4 years ago now, and I got an email that said, I'm ready to commit suicide. Can you help me? And it was a transgender who had lived the life, transgender life, for 2 or 3 years and was totally discouraged with it. I was actually exchanging information and talking with him on some level up to 5 times a day to keep him from committing suicide. He eventually restored his life. He detransitioned back. This is my entire office right here. My computer, my desk, my chair, my slippers, and this is where I sit and work. I don't need any more than this. Everything that I do is right here on the computer or on the phone talking to people. I've detransitioned now for 25 years, a little longer. And so it was when I detransitioned that everything began to make sense to me. And when I realized that how important it was to detransition to become psychologically, emotionally, and socially a healthy person, that I wanted others who wanted to detransition to have a way to come back to that same experience that I have. And if they have regret and want to detransition, I've built a website for them, sexchangeregret.com. How are you?
Doing good today. Doing good. How about you and KC?
Yeah, we're doing good. Billy contacted me by email, like most people do, and we began to exchange information, and I talked to him on the phone. His story was just like mine. He was sexually abused. I was sexually abused, and that was kind of the trigger point of changing genders.
Come on, kids. Come on, come get your clothes on. Come on. Come on, buddy.
Seven years after transitioning to a woman, I started thinking, okay, I've been doing this for 7 years now. My problems should have gone away by now, but they hadn't. And I actually had more problems at that point. Another problem is just trying to pass. I'm trying to do my hair just right, trying to do my makeup just right, trying to look just right to where people would not be uncomfortable, because you can see when people identify you as being transgendered. I was like, this isn't life. Nothing has really changed. I'm still struggling. I was better off as I was before the surgery, before the hormone treatment. So it was at that point, 5 years after the surgery, thereabouts, that I started to have thoughts about changing back.
That's my student ID from LSU. That's when I was swimming at LSU. I had a really big Adam's apple, heavy brow ridge, a pretty big jaw. This is the ID after I had SRS surgery. And then when I was transitioning back to male in Louisiana, that's the driver's license I got. I had a lot of other pictures from that period, but one day when I was sitting in my office looking at the pictures of me back during this 7 year period, 7-8 years as being female, it was so discouraging that I wasted so much of my life in this particular period doing all of this, that just in the state that I was in, I erased all of the pictures that I had off of the computer and destroyed the pictures of me from that period to try to erase that period in my life. With God's help, I went through the change and I went back to being male. So I went through that surgery, and on the backside of it, I was in so much pain.
and so much discomfort, and regretted that surgery more than the first SRS surgery that I had. And then when he took the bandages off of my stomach to show me the skin graft, I was almost horrified at it. To me, it was gross. But it was by that surgery and the paperwork that the surgeon gave me saying when I had the surgery done initially, he gave me the paperwork that said, okay, I've been surgically changed to male.
I'm 60 years old. There's no reason for me, after a lifetime of being in transition, to go and start living, dressing as a man anymore. There's no benefit in it. But there is a benefit in my standing before an audience of young kids in college who are considering this path and saying to them, okay, I'm the real deal. I started living as a woman when I was 20. I've lived 40 years of my life. I've had breast augmentation. I've had genital surgery. I've had 40 years of hormones. All of it has not made my life any better. It's never solved the problem. You break your left leg. You go into a doctor's office, and under the transsexual rule of medical treatment, they say, this is your new normal, and we're going to break your right leg too.
I think it's safe to say that when somebody has been cross-dressed and affirmed, physically abused and sexually abused, that psychotherapy is the most needed therapy, not hormones and surgery.
When I met Rachel, I was already legally a man again. Hey, baby doll, how was your day? Her and her daughter came over to my house for a Fellowship of Christian Athletes meeting, and it was there that I first met her. And that was in 2010. And from there, I invited her for a coffee.
And I didn't know what that meant. So I asked one of my classmates, what does that mean? One of my younger classmates. So she said, well, that's a safe way for asking for a date or trying to meet up with somebody.
I shared with her my path and what had happened and how I was. And at that time, she said, okay, let's be friends.
We shared the same interests, like what I was saying. We both liked doing, especially swimming, but triathlons. We liked hiking. I don't know. I know he will say he remembers one time we went on a hike and we sat down for a rest and on a bench, and I kind of sat close to him and put my head on his shoulder.
And it was at that point I knew our relationship was changing, and that it was okay for me to start pursuing Rachel in a romantic way. And I did. Excellent. You're good. The intimacy between Rachel and me, with me being surgically altered, I cannot come to an orgasm. So Rachel and I, we enjoy intimacy.
Oh, isn't that wonderful, fresh air?
Fresh air is good. It is beautiful, and I'm praying for a little bit more rain, because if you notice up here, the green is starting to turn back to brown.
He asked me pretty soon, after a few months, if I'd marry him. And I think I thought about it for not too long, maybe a week or two, and responded yes. My older daughter said it probably best, is they wanted me to be happy.
And I knew I was gonna change back, but the big moment came when I was praying, and the Lord Jesus appeared to me as a vision in the prayer, as though I could touch him, just like I could touch anybody here. And He came and reached down to me with his hands and picked me up and said, "You're now safe with me forever." And it was at that moment that my life changed in a split second. Look at this, I'm healthy. Many of the people who've gone through this before me are dead. They're alcoholics. They're still struggling with their identity. And I'm alive and well and healthy and married for 21 years to my wife. That's redemption, restoration, and I'm helping other people. What other thing that's better in life when you're reaching out and helping other people with their life?
To you, babe. I love you.
I love you.
Did you taste it?
Mm-hmm.
That's
kind of tough.
Mm, it is. Not but it's right. Still pretty. It's still pretty tasty. I am so happy I am the way I am now. Even though I have problems, I have a choice to let my problems burden me. Or to look up, to see each day as a beautiful day, and just to enjoy life.
But anyways, we're going to get into some stories for you guys today. One in particular, this is really super interesting for me to watch, I'm sure for Will too, but 60 Minutes did a segment last night where they highlighted transgender people who have gone through the sort of reassignment process, whether that be puberty blockers, hormones, the sex reassignment surgeries, and have then chosen to detransition. So it was an interesting thing for me to see 60 Minutes really want to highlight this. So I wanted to share this little segment with you guys and we'll react to it. So let's go ahead and get that running. Here we go.
In some cases, patients are choosing to reverse the process. It's called detransitioning. In her early 20s, Grace Ladinsky-Smith was seriously depressed and developed gender dysphoria. She began searching for answers in transgender communities on the internet.
And when I saw them being so happy and excited about doing this wonderful transformative process to really like become their true selves, it was like, have I considered that this could be my situation too?
Did this have any part of it? A sense that men had it easier in life than women did, and that your road might be easier if you were male?
Yes. I just had this sense that if I could inhabit life as like a trans man, as a man, then I wouldn't feel so self-conscious. I was thinking that it would make me feel very free.
That's such an interesting perspective on why she would choose to transition, to see people who go through this sort of whole all-encompassing change to who they are as a person, or at least how they physically look. And she saw that and thought that was alluring. That's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, that's weird, like thinking that you want to be a man because of the privileges of being a man, not, right? I guess, because you feel like you were born a man, but more so just because you think that men have it easier in this world.
Right.
That's kind of a weird way to look at it, for sure.
And it's definitely not true. And I think there's, we live in a society where the left would tell you that we live in a patriarchy and that as a woman, life is harder for you. I certainly don't echo that sentiment by any means. And I think there's a lot of people who will tell you that that's simply not the case. It's really not easier as a man in society. I think men and women complement each other. And it depends on what scope at which you look through the world, because men struggle with a lot of things that women don't struggle with.
Listen, if women wanted true equality to disband the patriarchy, then let's have more women septic tank cleaners.
Right.
If we get more women in the septic tank cleaning industry, then we can finally say that we're even, okay? But until women do that, you can't talk.
It's so funny because when women talk about the patriarchy and wanting to sort of usurp the power that men have, it only applies to the men of status who are living very, very successful lives. It never applies to the average everyday Joe who is just doing his job and supporting his family. And people look at this world and they call it a patriarchy. I'm not sure what they base that off of. I don't know if it's just male success or something of that nature, but men struggle with suicide, domestic violence. There's more men in jail, more men die in war. So what metric are we measuring patriarchy by?
Yeah, it's like 91% of all deaths that happen at work are men. And it's like,
exactly.
Young men kill themselves at a rate 5 times higher than young women. So what kind of patriarchy are you talking about? Is that the patriarchy that they want?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Anyways, let's keep going here.
Grace says she found a gender therapist on the internet and told her, "I'm thinking of transitioning."
She thought it all sounded pretty good.
Did the therapist not question you about how deep the feeling was and what it was stemming from?
She didn't really go into what my gender dysphoria might have been stemming from. We only did a few sessions.
Because she was over 18.
Okay, so I just want to talk about this part real quick. We're talking about the doctor and like the ladies talking about, like, did she not question you that much on this? It's like, I can't imagine being a doctor right now in this kind of scenario. That seems like it would be really scary. Like, you would probably lose your job. Like, imagine if someone came up to you and said, "Oh, I'm thinking of transitioning," and then you question them back and say, "Are you sure?" These people will say, "What are you, some kind of transphobe? Are you some kind of bigot? Are you dismissing my transgender nature of myself?"
Yeah.
You know, so it's like this lady got it so easily that the doctor was like, "Oh yeah, you're transitioning, like whatever, we'll give it to you." But that's, it's almost not exactly the doctor's fault in a sense, where it's like, this doctor is probably fearful for their job, because if they don't give it to people like this, then other people come after them.
Right. We were sort of melding this society to where you can say that you are whatever you are and you can live free of objection. And a doctor's job is to object, to question, to really come down to the base of the problem that you're experiencing. And she sounds like she's been going through a lot of different things, depressive thoughts, suicidal ideation, manic depressive disorder, a lot of different issues that could be talked about here. But as a doctor, when you hear the word transition, I imagine you'd be a little fearful to question why.
Yeah, you're like kind of forced to say it, you know, because then people will say that you're a bigot.
Yeah.
If you don't give in to these people saying that they're transgender, then you're a bigot.
And it really is inadequate care at the end of the day that this girl can go for a few therapy sessions and then somehow be signed up to start transitioning to another sex. It's insane. Anyways, we'll let her tell her story.
And didn't need parental consent. She says she merely signed an informed consent form at a clinic and got hormone shots.
They asked me, "So why do you want to go on testosterone?" And I said, "Well, being a woman just isn't working for me anymore." And they said, "Okay."
So that was that. You got your prescription for testosterone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just 4 months after she started testosterone, she says she was approved for a mastectomy, what's called top surgery, that she told us was traumatic. You know, I'm kind of surprised, because based on everything you've said up to now, I would have thought you'd have a great sense of relief.
I started to have a really disturbing sense that, like, a part of my body was missing, almost a ghost limb feeling, about being like, there's something that should be there. And the feeling really surprised me, but it was really hard to deny.
And so she detransitioned by going off testosterone and then went back to the clinic. And she says complained to the doctor that the process didn't follow the WPATH guidelines.
I can't believe that I transitioned and detransitioned, including hormones and surgery, in the course of like less than 1 year. It's.
Did you see, we had the same glasses.
You guys have the same glasses.
Uh-huh. There the you same go. Glasses.
I mean, kudos to her for recognizing that there was an issue and that she didn't want to fully go through with it and then reverting back. I can only imagine how hard that must have been.
This is one thing that we hear from the left. Like, we'll talk about this transgender stuff and issues with this, and they'll say, "Oh, this isn't really happening. They're not giving it to kids, and it's totally fine. Like, people just let them do whatever they want." And it's like, they are. This is a true story of someone coming out and saying that I was under 18, about to give informed consent and get all this stuff.
Yep.
Is this happening all over America? To say that it's not happening is being incredibly naive. It's happening. And the main problem with all of this is that people can just go in, walk in, and get it done, and the doctor will basically do it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And people want to be accepting of this stuff, and I understand that, but you have to take this on with an amount of caution. These are very young people, and she seems particularly malleable as to what her life should look like. I mean, she says she went online and saw that people had transitioned, and that's what sparked her wanting to do this. It wasn't sort of any sort of deep-seated feeling that she had had for years and years. She saw other people and was influenced to do so. So we have to keep that in mind when we talk about these issues, and it's really sad that people feel the need to do this, and there's essentially no objection. There was an objection from people in her life. There There was not objection from her doctors. There was not objection from her therapist. And she went through this entire process only to revert back to where she was. And I can't imagine the amount of strife you have to go through to do all of that.
I mean, really, in like thinking about it, a doctor who gives this kind of thing and makes someone do this should be fired from their job.
Yep.
If the doctor says that this is okay and doesn't give enough science to back it up, I mean, I thought the left was all about following the science. Mm-hmm. If they don't give enough science to back it up, they should be fired from their job. What this girl went through because of this doctor and because of this therapist putting that out there is horrible.
Yeah, we are sacrificing health for the sake of open-mindedness. And as Michael Knowles would say, you can be so open-minded that your brains fall out. And that's exactly what's happening with this sort of trend that we're seeing right now with transgender youth. Anyways, let's continue.
It's completely crazy.
It greatly concerns me where the field has been going. I feel like what is happening is unethical and irresponsible in some places.
Laura Edwards Leeper was the first psychologist at the first major youth gender clinic in the U.S. at Boston Children's Hospital. She says she has helped hundreds of teens and young adults transition successfully after a comprehensive assessment. Do you have conversations with your colleagues about this whole area of accepting what young people are saying too readily?
Yes. Everyone is very scared to speak up because we're afraid of not being seen as being affirming or being supportive of these young people or doing something.
That's exactly what I just said. I haven't watched this video yet, so this is a bonus for me. But it's like they are too scared to speak up and say something because then they're not seen as affirming. This is like, it's like, but you're a doctor. There's a difference between accepting someone and then a difference between like total dominion over how people are supposed to think. There's a total difference there. Like you can accept these people, know that they're out there and be like, okay, do your thing. Versus, no, you have to think a certain way and you have to accept this. Otherwise, if you don't, you are an evil, bigoted person.
It's so true. And we as physicians and medical practitioners, you should always keep that in mind. When you go into your job, when you become a doctor, you take a Hippocratic oath. One of the parts of that Hippocratic oath is to first do no harm. And in allowing somebody to transition without fully vetting them psychologically, without fully going through all the different treatment options that you can partake with that person, it's unethical and it is wrong. And doctors should be called out for this. There should be some form of accountability for the rate at which this is happening, especially to young people. And we have a whole subset of our society on the left who wants to fight for young kids. I mean, really children, to choose what gender they are and allow themselves to undergo puberty blocking and take hormones. And this is the result of that. This is what's going to happen because there's no evidence that proves that transitioning when you have gender dysphoria or you have gender dysphoric thoughts is helpful in your mental health or your life going forward. There's no evidence whatsoever.
And to hurt the trans community. But even some of the providers are trans themselves and share these concerns.
There's no confirmed number of detransitioners in the U.S., though their percentage among the more than 1.4 million transgender Americans is assumed to be small. They are becoming more public, though. We found a Reddit detransition support group with over 19,000 members worldwide, some saying they changed their minds because of family pressure or discrimination in employment and other areas, or simply regret. We also interviewed more than 30 detransitioners who say they also had experienced regret, including these four who hadn't met before now. How many of you feel that you were blindly affirmed?
I didn't get enough pushback on transitioning. I went for two appointments, and after the second one, I had like my letter to go get on cross-sex hormones.
How crazy is that? Two appointments, and all of them just echoed the same sentiment that Will just said. How many of you were blindly affirmed in your identity because of how far we have gone as a society to accept this? It is a really big problem. And what scares me the most in seeing this video and seeing those four people is how young they look. How young are those faces? These are the people who we are truly affecting with this ideology. We are pushing it in schools. We are pushing it with our children at a very, very young age. And this is the harm that it does.
Visits, that's it? All four tell us they learned about transitioning on the internet, where there are transformation videos on YouTube, trans influencers, and forums.
Yeah, I've just never been able to be me, but I can now.
For Daisy in Chicago, who says she started taking hormones at 18, everything was great in the beginning.
after every step that you take, every milestone feels like $1 million. When I got top surgery, I was elated. When I changed my name, I was elated. But when everything that I had set out to do was done, I still felt incomplete.
Garrett from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, went from taking hormones to getting his testicles removed, he says, in just 3 months, whereas the current guidelines call for continuous use for a year. He later got a breast augmentation, but instead of feeling more himself, he says he felt worse.
So more depressed after you transitioned than before.
Mm-hmm. I had never really been suicidal before until I had my breast augmentation. And about a week afterwards, I wanted to like actually kill myself. Like I had a plan and I was going to do it, but I just kept thinking about like my family to stop myself.
It's so sad, man. That's so sad.
It really is. And they make so many valid points that we should be talking about. The influence of social media is a major one. And we talked about this before, that social media just portrays the highlights of everybody's lives. And when kids go online and they watch these transgender YouTubers who are simply putting out, you know, the best parts of their lives, not telling you about the true reality, the true horror of transitioning from one sex to the other, that's the sort of impression that you take. And of course you would be elated to go to withstand that process without truly knowing how you will feel at the end of it. It's insane.
It's hard to know what to say about all that, because it's obviously heartbreaking to see this kid break down and talk about killing himself, because it's so many of these people are pushed into it. They're pushed into it. Again, talking about the social media stuff, I mean, that is our culture right now.
Yep.
I mean, as we talked about, I mean, transgenders are like, what, 0.1% of the population, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you go around, I mean, we live here in Los Angeles, you go around Los Angeles, the amount of stuff you see with trans people, you would think that it's half of the population of this country.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it's everywhere. And it's being pushed on people, and then it's pushed on people, and it ruins people's lives. It makes people want to kill themselves. Look at the suicide rates of transgender people now. So high, because people are being pushed into it.
Right, and it's something to talk about. Like what that kid just said, I believe a young girl said, when everything was done, I still felt incomplete. And people have tried to study this time and time again. Out of Sweden, one of the most comprehensive studies that happened around transgender individuals was a 30-year span of which they followed people from coming out as transgender to undergoing transitional surgery, and then 10 to 15 years after that. And after going through surgery, there was no decline within the suicide rate. There was no decline within the depressive rate. In fact, the suicide rate of people who are transgender even after surgery is about 20 times higher than your normal peer.
Yeah. It's just a sad reality. Sad.
So here we go. Let's keep watching.
It kind of felt like, how am I ever going to feel normal again like other guys now?
Long before the anti-trans legislation was introduced across the country, the challenges facing the transgender community.
First, just 60 minutes. It's not anti-trans legislation for all these different things, okay?
Right.
It is legislation trying to not have trans people in women's sports. It is legislation about bathroom laws, those types of different things. It's not anti-trans, okay? Just so you guys watching know.
We're daunting. LGBTQ advocacy groups like GLAAD and the Human Rights Campaign are worried that highlighting the stories of detransitioners could make things worse. Alfonso David is president of the Human Rights Campaign.
We're talking about a community, transgender people that are already marginalized, that are being further marginalized and victimized by elected officials, by anti-equality forces. They're being used as a political football. And these are real people. These are real lives that we're talking about.
So what?
Political football? Are you kidding me? This leftist guy coming on here talking about political football. Do you know what you are doing with the trans community? I'll talk to gay people out here in Los Angeles all the time. A lot of I did an event with Log Cabin Republicans before. If you guys know what that is, it's like a group of gay Republicans. They're great guys. Anyway, did an event with them, and it's like lots of them, like, they want the gay community, not necessarily with the trans community. They don't think that they totally equate together. They don't know why that the trans and gay communities are equated together. But the left puts them all together to make it so that they can use them for their political football. They can use those marginalized groups for their political gain. They're the ones doing it. We didn't even know. No one who's a conservative, we weren't bringing this stuff up. We weren't bringing up trans stuff and talking about it all every single day and having it all over the country until the left started bringing it up and saying how oppressed they are now. Terrible it is to be trans, and that everyone needs to be trans, like all of that. That was what they did. They did it to try and shame conservatives.
Yeah, he's totally projecting and, you know, gaslighting, saying that, you know, the thing, the very thing that they're doing, he's saying is what conservatives are doing. And just to his point that, like, these are real people, it's like, we sympathize with that. Our reactions watching, I'm sorry, I didn't have the camera on. Our reactions watching, you know, this guy share his struggles and his journey is, you know, genuine compassion. And like, you know, we at PragerU believe in Judeo-Christian values. And one of those is that human beings are created in God's image with, and they have infinite value and worth because of that. And so I don't care, you know, if you're black, white, you know, yellow, trans, gay, straight, whatever, we believe that you have value and worth. But, and these people who are genuinely struggling, when they need support, but what they're getting from these leftist activists is not support. What they're getting is this, they're pushing them into this faux reality to make themselves feel better. And the button's stuck, that's why. Sorry, guys. But they're pushing them into this faux reality, and it's like this virtue signaling to make themselves feel better about being activists and being on the right side. And the people who suffer are the actual, you know, transgender or people who are confused about their identity and all that stuff, which, by the way, when you're this age, who's not confused about their identity when you're like a teenager, a young teenager? And we live in a society where all this stuff is, you know, being pushed on them from a young age, and the confusing messages. And then when they go to try to get help, the people are pushing them further and deeper into it. And that's what's creating these outcomes. That's why they become suicidal and have all these issues.
Right. They're not getting help. They're getting pushed into it. Instead of someone saying, well, maybe let's like de-escalate the situation and see if maybe like, you just are a boy who enjoys the color pink. Mm-hmm. I could wear a pink tie. Mm-hmm. It's a good-looking thing. But it's like they push you into it instead of trying to give you another solution. That's the insidious part, what the left is doing. And then again, it's even more insidious because most of these people, at least in this interview right here, are children. These are people who are under the age of 18 who are having these transitions, totally regretting it, and their lives could potentially be ruined or they kill themselves.
Exactly. And it's we as conservatives, we're never really, this issue did not become a really hot button issue until it started to encroach on other things. Like Will said, transgender women joining in women's sports or it being forced upon children. And that is a really, really big issue. That's why we should be talking about this, because this video, if nothing else, is extremely, extremely sad. And I was looking into studies to find out more about the mental health of people who are identifying as trans or trying to transition. There are so many studies, and if you look into their funding, they are funded to push an image, push the fact that you should transition if you identify as trans or if you are experiencing gender dysphoria. There are no studies that look at transitioning transgender people juxtaposed with people who go and try to actively seek out long-term treatment to help themselves rather than getting surgery, rather than mutilating their bodies, which is a very, very sad thing to see. And we should be looking into this further because we are pushing it so hard as a society, and young people are going to be the ones that bear the brunt of this issue.
Right before the black guy came on, she was talking about how activists say that highlighting stories of detransitioning mm-hmm. is bad for the trans movement. She said something basically like that.
Yep.
And it's like, you're not using it as political football when you are saying that highlighting stories of real people's struggles with this is bad for the movement. Are you serious? Right. These are people's real lives. These are people's truths. And you want to hide them mm-hmm. from the world because it paints an ugly picture on the things that you're doing to people.
Right. We want to look at all of this stuff in a positive light. And that's why these kids got tricked into doing this by looking at social media, because it's all positive highlights of people transitioning. They don't want to talk about the true horror of it, the true problems that can result of it. They don't want to talk about the suicide rate within the transgender community, the rate of psychiatric hospitalization, which is 2.8 times higher than the average United States citizen. They don't want to talk about the bad things because they know if people knew that, they would reevaluate their treatment. That's what they would do.
What are some of the challenges right now facing the trans community?
The trans community is facing an epidemic of violence. We've had at least 44 transgender people killed last year. Transgender youth, in many cases, attempt suicide at a rate of four times that of their peers.
There's worry that the idea that people regret the move can be used against trans people in this political environment.
I worry about it too. I think the kinds of things we advocate for don't hurt trans people. Like, we want there to be more help from therapists with dysphoria. We want there to be longer term tracking of health outcomes. Everyone benefits from that.
Dr. Anderson says the stories of detransitioners mean the trans community as a whole needs more and better health care, not bans on treatment. And she thinks it's a mistake to ignore their voices.
I think we cannot turn a blind eye to
to the needs of those trans people who have gotten less than adequate care or even poor care. My heart goes out to them. And their stories are important, and we can't deny them.
There's just so much to unpack in that video.
I think we might get flagged on Facebook for this one.
We just might, but at least we are bringing light to an issue that needs to be talked about.
I'm not going to hold back on the things that I say or believe in just because Daddy Zuck might get a little upset with me, okay? My job is to make Mark Zuckerberg upset.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mark. I'm sorry that we have to talk about this.
Don't apologize. Don't apologize to him, okay? Tell him how you really feel.
Well, I really feel like it's this issue is going to grow. It's going to get worse and worse. We're giving this a lot of visibility, but the left is also giving it a lot of visibility. So there has to be some sort of counterpart that is talking about the real truths behind being transgender and actually transitioning. Like I said, I looked into studies about what was going on here and about what happens to your mental health when you transition. The most comprehensive study I could find was one out of Sweden for 30 years. This is relatively new. And a lot of people on the left will tell you, oh, well, just as many transgender people existed back in the day. They just weren't as visible because they were fearful. I would argue that that's not the case. Definitely that is not the case at
all. Definitely not.
This is growing exponentially within our society, and it is going to become a problem.
I think there's a difference between the left and the right where we see, like, if something like this that I was advocating for, like, let's say I'm advocating for trans stuff and the situations were reversed, and then I heard about these detransitioning stories, I'd be like, wow, maybe what I'm doing is really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should take a deeper look at what I'm doing. But the left, instead of doing that, they hide it. They hide it. They want to hide this information from people. I feel like as conservatives, at least me and Amala, sometimes Taylor, we're very open about a lot of the stuff that we talk about, and we take a pretty well-rounded approach and say, okay, here's it from this side, here's what we think about it, we show the videos, we do whatever, so that we can get a full world view of whatever's going on. But when it comes to these issues with the left, they have their one-track mindset, they're playing their political football, like this guy said, and then they disregard any of the other information that's going on. They hide it from you. But this is what they're allowed to do. When you have control of the universities and the media, like, that's what you're allowed to do because you have control over the entire narrative. So that's why we have to be better than the left. Okay, people think that you can just be on an even playing ground with the left and know your facts and know what's going on in the world, but that's not true. We have to be better than the left at every single turn because they already control everything. We have to be a step above and a step ahead of them at every single thing we do.
It's so true. They do already control most of our institutions, all of the media for the most part, and they don't fight fair. So we're over here trying to fight the battles with them, but also fight fair. So we do have to work harder to do so. We do have to show both perspectives. We do have to actively tell you why these things are going on and why they're wrong.
This is like, you know, I saw a tweet, I think it was from Jack Posso the other day, where it was like talking about the left and cancel culture and stuff like that. And it was like the left canceling people. And he was like, cancel them back, play by their rule book.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, at a point, when do we have to do what they do to get our values across?
Right. Because we are losing. we are losing our values.
Yes, Craig would tell you that over and over again.
Yeah, the left is winning.
The left.
And as true as that is, like, that the, you know, it's an uphill battle, like, the best ally to have is the truth, and that is on our side, you know? And that's why.
Excuse me.
Wow, what a burp over there.
Sorry.
Sounded like a dinosaur. We just watched Jurassic Park last weekend. Maybe that was an inspiration.
We did.
Shooter!
But, having the truth is the best ally. And, you know, when you're citing studies, we have a 5-minute video. I put it in the comments, Why Girls Become Boys by Abigail Schreier. She has a great book as well. And she's been, you know, deplatformed by Amazon and Target, and everyone's pulled her book off the shelves because it says true things and looks at true research and asks honest questions and looks at this issue honestly. And that's all. I mean, we just got to lean into the truth and keep beating that drum and not be ashamed of it and not be afraid to speak out and say true things, because that's what's, you know, going to wake people up.
Yeah,
that's what it was with the Israel stuff that just happened. You know, like when we were doing that interview that came out, what was it, last week with David Brog, mm-hmm. and I say, I want to ask you questions, not just things that I'm thinking. I want to ask you questions that I'm hearing on social media from people that the left is saying, so you can like directly counter those points.
Right.
When Marissa came on last Friday, if you guys saw, the CEO of PragerU, and I'm asking her stuff, I say, here's what people are saying about it. Tell me why they're wrong. That's what I want to do. I want to get a holistic worldview so I can have the truth on my side, versus the left, who will just pat each other on the back, saying the same thing over and over again and not have a different point of view expressed at all.
Exactly. And they push and push. And I'm sure you've been seeing it with the transgender issue. It's really hard to run away from. And like Will said, even though they represent nearly less than 1% of our U.S. population, you would think that they make up quite a big portion of our citizens, because the left is pushing it everywhere you look. They're pushing it in kids shows. They're pushing it in public schools. They're pushing it on cereal boxes. I'm sure you saw that Kellogg's came out with a Pride cereal box that allows your child to pick their pronouns on the side of the box. And now it's being pushed within our colleges. So that leads me to our next story. A judge rules that a Christian college must open women's bathrooms and showers to biological males. So this has been a lawsuit that has been ongoing with this Christian college, College of the Ozarks. It was a lawsuit that was opened in April, arguing that you should not force religious schools to allow biological males into female showers, into female dormitories. Now the judge has ruled against them and allowed that.
Seems pretty fair. Yeah. Just like the left, incredibly fair.
Right?
It's evil. It's genuinely evil. These kinds of things are evil, that you would force people to do this. If a school wants to choose and say, okay, we are going to do this, we're not a Christian school, like, okay, whatever, if that's what you're going to do, I don't know what I'm supposed to do about it. But, you know, if a school decides not to and they say, we don't want to, have this at our school, why can someone else step in and say, no, you have to do this?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. That's so unfair that someone is coming in forcing them to do it.
Like I said, and it's okay to be trans. If you are a grown man or woman and you want to transition, that is your personal choice. Conservatives don't really have a huge stake in that argument. We have stake on it when it starts to starts to infringe upon our rights and the things that we're doing within our own lives. And the school said, women should not be forced to share private spaces, including showers and dorm rooms, with males. And religious schools shouldn't be punished simply because of their beliefs about marriage and biological sex. And that's absolutely right. When does this argument get to infringe on religious beliefs, especially when the College of Ozarks is a private Christian college? That is completely within your right to dictate what the rules are on your premises, on your campus. Yet now we've had the government infringe upon that and rule against a college of which has their own set of values, and values that are religious ones nonetheless.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But it just shows like the state of the world right now, that even a starkly conservative Christian school can then be changed in a matter of years into a terrible leftist institution. Don't send your kids to college, okay? And don't donate to your alma mater. Don't do either of those things, because they will end up in a shower with someone of the opposite sex.
That's an interesting way to put that.
But, you know what I mean?
You know, luckily what this college is going to do, they say that they are planning to appeal this case and continue to fight. And that's what we have to do. We can't just concede ground over and over and over again, especially when it comes to a private institution like this. We cannot allow the government to keep infringing upon our beliefs and upon our rights. It's just not acceptable.
As if you're a student and you are at a school when you're seeing these things happen to you, right, then you got to join PragerForce. PragerForce is our student program. We talk about this all the time, but I got to push you guys to do it, all right? This is our, what is it called? We're trying to get membership drive month, where we are trying to reach 2,000 new members of PragerForce by the end of this month. We're almost there, and so you guys have to sign up. You can go to PragerForce.com. Taylor's about to drop the links, and I know that's what he's doing, typing over there. It's an amazing program. You can get all sorts of digital resources, get online community. There's tons of events we do online and in person. I mean, thousands of kids all across the world. We got a PragerForce kid in Venezuela recently. I mean, it's just, it is a way for that you feel, imagine, be you. At a college or a young professional or high school, whatever, around the world, and you're lonely, okay? You're a little lonely guy because no one else is conservative around you. But you can go with PragerForce and find like-minded people who you can hang out with, learn from, and get opportunities for work, business, and school with. It's an amazing thing. PragerForce.com. Join. And if you're already watching this as a PragerForce member, you guys are slacking, okay? What you need to do is get one kid who you know to also join PragerForce with you. Get them to sign up. Send them the link. Make them do it tonight, all right? Make them do it.
Yeah, both Will and
do
I.
It.
Do it, you guys.
Do it.
Will's coming after you. That's an advanced directive. You better do it.
Yes, you have
yeah.
to.
Both Will and I did start in PragerForce. So
we did.
And now here we are.
Yeah.
So who's to say where you'll end up if you join PragerForce?
President.
You know? You could be the president of the United
world.
States. Of the world.
Saruman.
We're going to lead into our next story here. So the New York Times finds support for Black Lives Matter plummeted since last summer, makes zero references to the months and the months of riots that happened last year. So if you guys are unaware of Black Lives Matter, which I...